ते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
रीडिंग फ्रॉम श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 10 चैप्टर 86 एंटाइटल अर्जुन किडनैप सुभद्रा दिस इज टेक्स्ट नंबर 10
रतस्तो धनुर आदाय रतस्तो धनुर आदाय सुरां चारोन्धतो भतान सुरांश्चारुदतो भतान विद्राव्य क्रोशताम स्वानाम विद्राव्य क्रोशताम स्वानाम स्वभागामृगरादिव रतस्तो धनुरादाय सुरं चारुणधतो भतान विद्रव्य क्रोशताम स्वानाम स्वभागामृगरादिव
On his chariot, Stha standing, Danuhu his bow, Adaya taking up, Suran the heroes, Cha and Arundhata trying to block him, Bathan and the guards, Vidravya driving off. Kroshatam, as they shouted in anger. Swanam, her relatives. Swa, his own. Bhagam, rightful proportion. Mrigarat, the king of animals, the lion. Iva, just as. Translation. Standing on his chariot, Arjun took up his bow and drove off the valiant fighters and palace guards who tried to block his way. As her relatives shouted in anger, he took Subhadra away just as a lion takes his prey from the midst of lesser animals. There is no purport to this. We'll continue reading. When he heard of Subhadra's kidnapping, Lord Balaram became as disturbed as the ocean during the full moon. But Lord Krishna respectfully took hold of his feet and together with other family members, pacified him by explaining the matter. Lord Balaram then happily sent the bride and groom very valuable wedding gifts consisting of elephants, chariots, horses and male and female servants. Shukadeva Goswami continued, there was a devotee of Krishna's known as Shutadeva, who was a first-class Brahmana, perfectly satisfied by rendering unalloyed devotional service to Lord Krishna. He was peaceful, learned, and free from sense gratification. Living as a religious householder in the city of Mithila, within the kingdom of Videha, he managed to fulfill his obligations while maintaining himself whatever sustenance easily came his way. By the will of Providence, he obtained each day just what he needed for his maintenance, and no more. Satisfied with this much, he properly executed his religious duties. Purport by the disciples of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. An ideal Vaishnava Brahmana, even if encumbered by ties of family life, should work only as hard as required to meet his obligations, without being unnecessarily agitated for material advancement. He should devote the best part of his time and assets to his higher duties in the Supreme Lord's service. If a householder can succeed in this program despite the unavoidable difficulties of this degraded age, he can expect Lord Krishna's personal attention, as will be seen in the case of Shutadev, the perfect Brahmana of Mithila.
Om Ajnanti Mirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurunvilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Utaha Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Ragunatam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakanvitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dinabandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Shute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripasindubhyevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama,
Hare Krishna. I'd like to welcome all of you all to today, Sunday morning Bhagavatam class. So we are reading a very interesting section from the Srimad Bhagavatam. So, I'll just summarize the whole pastime that we have been reading for the last few days, and we'll try to understand what we can learn from this very special and sweet pastime of Krishna and Arjun in the Srimad Bhagavatam. As we are seeing that we are coming towards the end of the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, This is the 86th chapter of the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. In four more chapters, this canto will be completed. The Samam Bonam of Srimad Bhagavatam, the pastimes of Lord Krishna. And in this particular section, where it's kind of at a height of its experience, Srimad Bhagavatam is teaching us a very valuable and important lesson through this particular story, through this particular pastime. And using Arjun as a medium, Krishna is teaching us one of the most essential values and lessons that we can learn about being a devotee of Krishna. We'll see that towards the end, what that particular thing is. So, this particular pastime begins with Parikshit Maharaj wanting to know about his grandmother's marriage. Now, knowing about your father and mother's marriage or something, that makes sense. Knowing about grandmother's marriage doesn't really make so much sense, because it's like two generations away, you know. Nobody really, at least, I'm never really bothered about, you know, how my grandmother got married and all that. I don't know. I know very less people who may be enthusiastically interested in how their grandmother and grandfather got married. Two generations away, it doesn't make sense. It's not relevant. But from Parikshit's point of view, it's very relevant, because Parikshit's grandmother was not just an ordinary person. Parikshit's grandmother was the sister of Krishna. Parikshit's grandmother was Krishna's greatest devotee. She was not just an ordinary soul, she was Yogamaya herself. Subhadra is Yogamaya herself, worshipable personality. Naturally, knowing about somebody of that stature is very important, historically also. But more than that, more important than that, the reason Parikshit wanted to know about Subhadra's marriage was because it had a connection with Krishna. Parikshit is not interested in anything that is not connected with Krishna. Parikshit is not interested in anyone that is not connected with Krishna. Essentially, the entire Srimad Bhagavatam, every word of the Srimad Bhagavatam has some connection with Krishna, and therefore the subject matter is very important for Parikshit. Somebody who is dying, somebody who is on his deathbed, this is the end of the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. Probably more than 6 days have passed, and he has just 1.5 or 2 days at max remaining for his passing away. Why would somebody be interested in somebody else's marriage? And that to two generations before. It doesn't make sense unless you see the Krishna connection. So Parikshit Maharaj, he questions here. The question follows from the previous narration, because so the previous story is about Krishna retrieving the sons of Devaki from the abode of death. So Parikshit Maharaj is connecting both those stories. He is saying, as difficult as it was for Krishna to retrieve the dead sons of Devaki, that much, if not more difficult, it was for Arjun to get married to Subhadra. How did that happen? So essentially here, two almost impossible stories have happened, you know, and Parikshit wants to know how Krishna is the cause of two very impossible stories happening. So Shukadeva Goswami just narrated the entire story of Devaki's sons being retrieved, and now Parikshit wants to know about the second story. And this story is even more exciting and relevant. And from Parikshit's point of view, Arjuna's marrying Subhadra is almost impossible, simply because Balramji opposed it. Now Balramji is not an ordinary person. When Balramji gets angry, he can drag the entire Hastinapur into the, you know, Yamuna river. So that story already happened some time back. So Parikshit Maharaj knows that dealing with Balramji is not such an easy thing. So he is inquisitive to know, in spite of Balram wanting to marry Subhadra to Duryodhan, how did this thing happen? Surely there must have been a Krishna Leela. There must have been some intervention of Krishna into this. And therefore he wants to know, how did Krishna intervene and what was Krishna's intervention? One time, three sages went to a temple to have darshan of Lord Vishnu's deity. Now this is a traditional South Indian temple. Everything is dark, no lights, no halogen lights, no lamps inside, only candle, only ghee wicks basically. So the place was dark inside, because of which they couldn't see anything. The first sage, he lit a lamp. And when the lamp lit up, immediately there was light around. The sage, he gave his realization after seeing that, you know, light coming. He said, this whole world is like a lamp. If you consider the entire world like a lamp, and you consider all the oceans in the world like ghee, and you can consider the sun like fire. So he said, this sun helps us eliminate all the external darkness. That was his realization after he saw this phenomenon. The second sage, he said, he lit up another lamp. And he said, love is like the lamp. And eagerness is like the ghee. And the mind is like the thread. He said, when the mind is lit up with the using the ghee of eagerness, then love illuminates. So he said, this is the way to remove internal darkness. So the first sage, he was speaking about external darkness. The second sage, he was speaking about internal darkness. The third sage, who was standing there, he saw these two lamps being lit. And after he saw these two lamps being lit, he focused on seeing the beautiful form of the deities, Lord Vishnu. And he said, I have seen the greatest wealth, the golden form of Lord Vishnu. And then these two sages who explained about two different ways of seeing the lamp being lit understood. So essentially, to remove the external darkness, we need light. To remove the internal darkness, we need the lamp of knowledge. But the fact is that just darkness being removed is not enough. After the darkness is removed, you should use that light to see the Lord. Otherwise, just lighting up a dark room doesn't make sense. So, when we are practicing spiritual life, when we are trying to understand the process of Krishna consciousness, it is like lighting a lamp within. So, external darkness can be eliminated, internal darkness can be eliminated with knowledge. But what is the benefit of eliminating darkness unless you actually use that light to see the Lord? The purpose of spirituality is not to eliminate darkness. The purpose of spirituality is to use the light to see Krishna, to see the Supreme Lord. And therefore, the Srimad Bhagavatam says, the highest perfectional gain of humanity is to engage in the discussions of the Supreme Lord and in activities of the Supreme Lord. And such activities are so nicely arranged in writing by great learned sages that the actual purpose of the year is served by just hearing about the Lord. So, in this particular pastime, Parikshit Maharaj is asking a question. And the reason Parikshit is asking a question at this point of time is because he is afraid. He is frightened. What is his fear? The fear of Parikshit Maharaj at this point of time is that the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam is getting over. Krishna Leela is getting over. So he is asking a question so that he can hear one more Leela of Krishna before Shukadeva Goswami goes further into other things. So here, in this particular pastime, in this particular section, Parikshit Maharaj addresses Arjun by a different name. He doesn't call him Arjun. He calls him as Vijaya. The word Vijaya means conquest. That means Parikshit Maharaj is trying to ask, how is Vijaya? So essentially, by referring to the name Vijaya here, he's trying to say that Arjun successfully kidnapped Subhadra. He successfully won Subhadra. So, here, Parikshit Maharaj is intrigued by two things.
First thing is that Krishna, he is retrieving Devaki's sons. That inspired him to ask a very difficult, how he did one more difficult job. And another thing is that Parikshit wants to know, when he heard of Krishna giving his mercy to his brothers, the other sons of Devaki, Parikshit wants to know that if he gave so much mercy to the sons of Devaki, how much more mercy he gave to his sister Subhadra. So he wants to know about that. He wants to know about how Krishna is so merciful to Subhadra. So here, the question is, when we see the Srimad Bhagavatam, when we read the Srimad Bhagavatam, we find that Parikshit is a very eager hearer. And we find his eagerness coming out in the form of relevant questions at the right point of time. Why is this question relevant to Parikshit? The reason it is relevant is because there is a special arranged relationship between Krishna and Subhadra, and Parikshit also has a special relationship with Subhadra, being his grandmother. So he feels, by being connected to somebody who has a special connection with Krishna, I also have a special connection with Krishna. So he wants to know more about that. Just imagine there are 25 pots lined up on a table, all filled with crystal clear, transparent water, tasty water. But if you see all these 25 pots of water kept in front of you, and if you are not thirsty, what's the point? Those 25 pots of water make no sense to you. Why? You are not thirsty. Similarly, if you are not thirsty for spiritual growth, then what is the use of having somebody who is a teacher sitting in front of you, who is like a pot of knowledge? So essentially, before we come to a teacher, we have to first be thirsty. If you are not thirsty, if you sit in front of a teacher, how much ever knowledge the teacher gives you, it will be useless for you, because you are not thirsty for that knowledge. And therefore, essentially, here this particular question of Parikshit is important, because it shows us that before seeking knowledge, you have to actually be thirsty for the knowledge. Before getting the knowledge, you have to be thirsty for that knowledge. And therefore, Parikshit keeps asking many questions. There are two types of bikes or, you know, two-wheelers nowadays. One is a bike that starts with kickstart. You have to really kick hard to start bikes, you know. Like, if you ever have tried to start a bullet, you understand this, you know. You kick a bullet and you don't know the exact technique of kicking a bullet, the bullet kicks you back, you know. So the first way of starting a bike is by kickstart. And then, since people don't have that kind of energy nowadays, there is a self-start. Press a button, starts immediately. That's exactly what spiritual life is. So, for spiritual life, there are two ways to begin your spiritual life. One is kickstart. That means somebody has to really work on you and get you started, you know, and then you start somehow, you know. That's what the whole effort of preaching is. Somebody is kicking so hard, and one day you say, chalo, I'll start, you know. Some people are tough, some people are even more tougher. Some people have to be bent down to start, you know, before kicking. So there is a lot of effort in kick-starting somebody's spiritual life. But the best spiritualists or the best people who take up spiritual life are those who are self-start. That means they are self-motivated to take up spiritual life. So Parikshit Maharaj is not one of those people who was kick-started in spiritual life. Parikshit Maharaj came searching for Shukadev Goswami. Shukadev Goswami didn't go searching for Parikshit Maharaj. And therefore, throughout the Srimad Bhagavatam, you find Parikshit Maharaj asking questions himself. You never find Shukadev Goswami asking, are you awake? You don't find Shukadev Goswami, you know, trying to inspire Parikshit by taking on some random topics here and there just to keep his attention alive. Parikshit Maharaj is not that kind of audience. He is self-motivated. He has, you know, a self-start from within. And therefore, for spirituality, the spark has to come from within. What is surrender? Surrender is about finding that finger to which you subordinate your intelligence. Parikshit Maharaj has found Shukadeva Goswami's finger. Arjun has found Krishna's finger. So essentially the story that we are going to discuss is about how Arjun subordinates himself to the will of Krishna. And that's what spiritual knowledge is about. What knowledge we get from the Vedas is like a paddy that is removed from a field. There's a lot of husk and there are many things that are in the paddy that is removed from a field. That knowledge that we get from the books and through others, through simple sources like this, is knowledge that is like rice from a shop. So Vedas are very complicated, there's a lot of knowledge, a lot of information, you have to de-husk it, you have to do a lot of efforts to get rice out. The knowledge that you get from the books is like husk is removed, rice is ready, sold in a shop, you just buy it. But the knowledge that we get from the mouth of an acharya is like cook rice. Prabhupada's books, Prabhupada's teachings is like cook rice. Rice is already cooked, steamed up, now you can eat it. But the knowledge that you get from the parampara through the disciplic succession, when it comes down to us finally, through some teacher who is right now in front of you, right now present, the present acharyas, who actually add to Prabhupada's teachings, their own realizations, their own experiences, their own understanding, it's like sweet rice. More work is done on it, you know. And then, now it's not just cooked, but it is also tasty. And therefore the effort that it takes to actually make the knowledge of the Srimad Bhagavatam available to us, the knowledge of the Vedas available to us, is an extremely intense amount of effort. And what we need to do? Just take it and eat it. But unfortunately, we are lazy about that also. One time there was a man who used to go to a church very regularly to attend programs. Suddenly he just stopped coming. So the pastor, he decided to go and find out why this fellow stopped coming. So he went to his house and this man welcomed him, made him sit on a chair, and they were sitting near a fireplace. So this pastor, he didn't speak any words. What he did essentially was, he took a tong and removed one piece of burning coal from the fire and put it on some place. Initially when he removed it from the fire, it was burning like hot fire, literally it was red hot. And when he kept it out, it started cooling down slowly and then it became black. Fire was gone completely. Then this pastor, he took the coal again with his tongue and put it back into the fire. And instantly that coal started burning like fire. And this pastor got up and he was walking away. This man said, "From next week I'm coming again. Thank you for this fiery sermon," you know. The pastor didn't speak anything. He just did something that made him understand that unless you are connected with fire like Krishna's qualities, fire like Krishna's pastimes, fire like Krishna's presence, you will lose the fiery qualities of spiritual life, devotional service. And therefore, the Guru many times doesn't have to speak to us to convince us. Just his presence is enough to help us stay inspired. And therefore, when we come to spiritual life, it doesn't matter if you don't have all the answers. What it matters is that, do you have the right questions? Spiritual life is not about having all the answers. It is about wanting to, or rather knowing the art of asking the right questions. Many times people ask this question, why do bad things happen to good people? And we have like an elaborate, you know, Gita course to answer that one question. And after the Gita course also people say, I don't get answer to this question. People are always bewildered when bad things happen to them. So one saint, he said, the question itself is wrong. Why do bad things happen to good people? The question is wrong. You know what is the right way of asking this question? The right way of asking this question is, when what happens to good people when bad things happen to them? I'll repeat. What happens to good people when bad things happen to them? That's the right question. That means when good people go through bad experiences, how do they react? That's what we need to know. It's not something new that bad things happen to good people. That everybody knows. This word is dukkhalai, we already know about it. Bhagavad Gita bahut sun liya. But the question is, when you are actually good and when bad things happen to you, how do you react? That actually determines whether you are good or bad. So therefore, many times, just asking the right question makes a big difference in life. There was a scientist who was a Nobel laureate. His name was Isaac Rabi. And this person, he was recognized for his discovery of nuclear magnetic resonance. This person said, "My mother made me a scientist unknowingly." So people asked him, "How did your mother make you a scientist unknowingly?" And this person gave a very interesting answer. He said, most mothers, when the child would come back from school, the mothers would ask them, "Did you learn anything today?" But my mother would ask me always, "Did you ask the right question today?" So when somebody learns to ask the right question, that's when the person gets the right answer. Of course, you ask the right question from the right source, and that answer gives you the spark that blows up your Krishna consciousness. So here, Parikshit Maharaj is asking the question to Sukadeva Goswami, and that question has given birth to this particular story. Now we begin the class. This is like a prelogue to it. So Sukadeva Goswami answers, or rather he explains to Parikshit Maharaj, he tells him the story about how Balram was the only person in the entire family who did not wanted Subhadra to marry Duryodhan. This is something that probably we will never understand. Why Balramji wanted Subhadra to marry Duryodhan? You know, Balramji is little different, you know. So whether he is as Nityanand Prabhu, whether he is Shukadeva, whether he is, you know, as Balramji, or whether he is as Lakshman, he has a mind of his own, you know. Ram told Lakshman, "Don't come to the forest." He said, "I am going to come. You don't, I will not listen to you." Chaitanya Mahaprabhu tells Nityananda Prabhu something, he does something ulta only. You know. So Balramji also has his own way of style of functioning. So he does his own way. So in the entire family, everybody including Vasudev did not want to marry Subhadra to Duryodhan. But Balramji was like insistent. So Krishna's personality is brought out here very beautifully. Krishna is one of those revolutionaries that always arranged for marriages where the girl's choice was considered primarily. You look at the list of marriages that Krishna has arranged for, whether it was his marrying 16,000 princesses, or whether it was his own marriage with Rukmini Devi, or whether it was this marriage of Subhadra with Arjun, or we find the story of Usha marrying Anirudh, or we find the story of Samba and Lakshmana. So now there are so many marriages that have taken place within the family of Krishna and around the family of Krishna, where Krishna has made sure that the girl's choice is taken care of, or girl's choice is considered. Of course, this is like a very important lesson for marriage board, you know, when they make matches, whether they actually considering the girls, you know. Many times it is very easy to fix marriages inspiring based on philosophy. But relationships don't necessarily always work on philosophy, it works on heart also. There should be a heartfelt connection, and that's when the relationship works. So Krishna arranged for Arjun to marry Subhadra, and the style in which Arjun kidnapped Subhadra, or rather married Subhadra, may seem to be a very unconventional style. But though it was a unconventional style, it was under the direct arrangement of Krishna, direct encouragement of Krishna. So Krishna was the co-conspirator to this kidnapping, you know. So Arjuna and Subhadra, they were maternal cousins. So here is one reference from the Srimad Bhagavatam, you know, about cousins marrying each other. Many times there is this doubt, you know, what's going on.
And it is explained that many times, especially in South India, this is very prevalent many times. So Sanatan Goswami, he at this particular point of time where Krishna Arjun is kidnapping Subhadra, he brings out a very beautiful way of addressing Arjun. He calls Arjun, instead of calling him as Arjun, he calls him as Prabhu. Now, in the Vedic scriptures, nowhere names are taken out of context. Whenever a name is taken of a particular personality, almost every time the name is taken in a different way. If you study the entire Bhagavad Gita, Krishna addresses Arjun by different names. Calls him Gudakesha, calls him, you know, Savyasachi, calls him so many things, Dhananjaya. The reason Krishna addresses Arjun by different name, of course, Arjun addresses Krishna by many names, Madhusudan, Govinda, so many names he addresses him. The reason is because there is a very subtle message that is passed through just calling each other's names. The message of respect. When Krishna is calling Arjun by different names, he is addressing different qualities of Arjun. And by calling Arjun by different qualities, he is actually appreciating Arjun and respecting Arjun. One of the most powerful ingredients for relationships to last for a lifetime is respect. When respect is lost, relationship is lost. And we find throughout the Vedic scriptures, every personality who addresses any other personality calls him respectfully. And so we find, of course, in today's time and age, if you want to call somebody, you call him most disrespectfully, that is considered intimate. In college, every boy or girl, they get some pet name, and most of the time animal names are kept, you know. Kutte, billi, kustu rakte na malala. So essentially, today, disrespect is considered intimacy, but in the Vedic times, respect is considered intimacy. Here, Shukadeva Goswami is calling Arjuna as Prabhu. Why is he calling Arjuna as Prabhu? Because Shukadeva Goswami is respecting Arjun because he is the friend of Krishna and he is the husband of Subhadra. And third thing was that Arjun is on a pilgrimage. So if you study this particular pastime, so he was going around different holy places. He was on a 12-year exile period basically because of one mistake that he made. There was a understanding between the five brothers that Draupadi, whichever brother she is, the other brothers won't enter the room. And if anybody enters the room, that person has to go out on exile for 12 years. So Arjuna happened to enter into the room of Yudhishthir and Draupadi because of an emergency. There was somebody in trouble. And just to get his bow, he went into the room. And Yudhishthir said, "Don't worry, I excuse you. The elder brother is like a father only. So you don't have to follow this vow." Arjuna said, "I will." And for those 12 years, he was going to different holy places. And the conclusion of those 12 years of holy places, he came to Prabhashetra, which is another holy place. So Shukadeva Goswami is calling Arjun as Prabhu because he is on a pilgrimage. Prabhus are on pilgrimage many times. Iskon wale to ghumte rehte hain. Almost every second day there is a yatra going somewhere, you know. All Prabhus are roaming around on yatras, you know. So Arjun is another Prabhu, he is on some yatra, some pilgrimage. But the pilgrimage ends up in a Prabhashetra. And there is another reason Saravan Goswami says that Krishna calls Arjun as Prabhu. The most important reason Krishna calls Arjun as Prabhu was because what was the pilgrimage of Arjun actually? The actual pilgrimage of Arjun was to carry out the order of Krishna. That's what pilgrimage essentially is. That's what Arjun's pilgrimage essentially is. Arjun is not on a pilgrimage just to visit holy places. Arjun is on a pilgrimage to carry out the will of Krishna. And therefore, Shukadeva Goswami is calling Arjun as Prabhu. Therefore, even Kurukshetra is considered to be a pilgrimage site. Battlefield, the most gruesome battle that ever took place in the history of mankind, where so much blood and so much, you know, ugly sights were there. Why is that place considered a pilgrimage site? Because
that was the place where the will of Krishna was carried out. Wherever the will of Krishna is carried out, that place becomes a pilgrimage site. And therefore, Shukadeva Goswami is calling Arjuna as Prabhu. For most people in life, transformation is very difficult. Because bringing about a change, bringing about a transformation is not easy. Change, when it is monitored and sustained for a long period of time, that becomes a culture. For most of us, this whole concept of surrendering ourselves to the will of the Lord is not our culture at all. Because it is not something that we are used to. It is not something that is in our, we are not sustained that culture. Like for example, many times people make laws. Like in India, there is many states have this law that smoking publicly is banned, not allowed. Now, there are many countries where this law is there, you know, like Singapore, many other countries this law is there. But in India, you still find people smoking publicly. So it's not that just by making a law, it works. Everybody follows the law. The law has to be made and somebody has to sustain that law by implementing it, making sure it works. And therefore, adherence to law, which is not monitored, doesn't become a culture. Change, when it is monitored and sustained long enough, that becomes a culture. The challenge is not change, but transformation of that change into a culture. Therefore, whenever we come to a spiritual lecture, we read a good book, it motivates us to make some change in our life, makes a change in our lifestyle. But unfortunately, these changes die an instant death if they are not monitored. Every year, during New Year, everybody makes New Year resolutions, you know. After you attend one motivational training program, you make solid resolution, I will do this. But as soon as you take that vow, make the desire, I will do it, then you go back home and you don't implement that change, you don't sustain the change, you don't make the change into a culture, it doesn't become a transformative change. And therefore, for somebody to be like Arjun and be called Prabhu, it's not just a change that has to be done, but it has to be a change that has to be sustained by a culture. Until it becomes a culture. One time there was a saintly person who had gone to one village. And he stayed in that village for about a month. So after a month, this saintly person, he decided to go away from there, go to some other place. So all the villagers, they were very, very inspired by his association for a whole month. They didn't want to let him go. So finally, they all went to him and they said, please don't go. So he told them, I will remain with y'all if y'all take a vow in front of me. By following that vow, I will remain with y'all and you will constantly feel my presence. So all the villagers one by one started taking a vow in front of this saint. Somebody said, I'll give up alcohol. Somebody said this, somebody said that. There was one fellow who was like an atheist. He didn't believe in God and all that. But he was somehow impacted by the saint's presence. He went to the saint and said, that I want to take a vow also, but I don't believe in God, I'm an atheist. What to do? You give me some advice. So the saint said, you also take a vow, but you take a small vow. Something that you can easily manage. Because every time you take a vow, it brings you one step closer to maintaining a culture of change. So this man said, no problem, I'll take a vow. So he said, what vow should I take? The saint told him, take a vow that without seeing somebody's face, you will not eat your meal. So that's simple. So the saint said, you don't have to actually go to some god or some deity or something like that. You can see anybody's face. You choose whose face you want to see. This man said, very easy. So I'll take that vow, he said. So he went home and he was thinking, whose face should I see before I start eating, you know. So now he didn't have the, you know, inspiration to go walk to a temple and see the deity and then eat. He didn't even have the inspiration to walk across the street to another place to see some, you know. So he said, let me take the easiest vow. Whosever face I can see from my window,
I will take that vow. He saw out of his window, he saw his neighbor's donkey. So he said, without seeing that fellow's face, I will not eat. So from that day onwards, very easy, just look out of the window, you see donkey, and he start eating, basically. So one day, when he went to see the donkey was missing. So he panicked, because he was feeling really hungry, and this donkey is not there. So he's saying, why did I take such a vow? You know, he was like repenting like anything. But he said, chalo, let me make some effort, one day at least. So he went on and asked the neighbor's son, where is your father and mother? The neighbor's son said, they have gone to the backyard, they are doing something there. So this fellow went to the backyard to find the father and mother, and he knew the donkey will be somewhere around. So he went and saw, what was happening was, behind this man and his wife, they were digging some place. And while digging, they actually found a pot of gold coins. And they wanted to hide the pot of gold coins from the government authorities and, you know, enjoy the wealth themselves. But exactly at that time, this fellow came over there. Now, they saw him, he saw them, but he didn't see what they were doing. He was walking back, because he saw the donkey and he was walking back, basically. He was extremely hungry, you know. But they felt that he has seen them taking the gold coin. So they ran to him and they said, don't speak anything to anybody, we will share the gold coin with you. So he started shouting, I have seen, and he went back, basically, you know. So they felt that he saw the gold coin. What he was shouting, I have seen the donkey, basically. And then finally, when they came and told him, and they were ready to share the gold coin with him, that's when he realized, by listening to one saintly person's one small advice, to make a small change in my life, and because I sustained the change through a culture of this, taking this vow, the change became a part of my life, and the change has brought such an amount of wealth in my life. So similarly, when we observe spiritual disciplines with great determination, we also discover buried treasures. And if we maintain that determination, there is great amount of treasure that is there to discover. So here, Arjun, what was his greatest spiritual treasure? The greatest spiritual treasure of Arjun was his willingness to follow the instructions of the Lord, to follow the will of the Lord. Arjun, he stayed in Prabhashetra, in that particular place, for 4 months. This is the time of the Chaturmas. Right now this period is going on. And after the 4 months of Chaturmas got over, Balramji invited him to have a meal. Can you imagine what's going on here? You know, Balramji is not an ordinary person. He is Guru. He is Adi Guru. But for 4 months, Balramji could not recognize Arjun. I mean, if you look at the movies and, you know, or in dramas, serials, you know, if somebody comes with a beard and somebody changes his dress, anybody can recognize that person, you know. It doesn't take too much effort, you know. And that too, if somebody is living with you for 4 months, only a fool will not be able to recognize him. But how can Balramji, who is Adi Guru, the most wisest and the most intelligent, who knows everything, past, present and future, not recognize that this person is Arjun? This is Krishna Leela in action. In the Kaliya Leela, when the entire Vrindavan was there, and Krishna was caught in the coils of Kaliya the snake, for 48 minutes, one muhurta, everybody was bewildered. Yashoda Mai, Nanda Maharaj, practically all the citizens of Vrindavan, they were completely bewildered seeing Krishna in the coils of Kaliya. There was only one person who was smiling, and that was Balramji. Because the only reason Balramji was smiling was because he knew Krishna. He knew Krishna's energies. He knew Krishna's Maya Shakti. He knew Krishna's internal Shaktis. He knew everything. He is Adi Guru. But when in the Ramayana we find that Sita was bewildered by the golden deer. But Lakshman was not bewildered at all. Lakshman told Sita and Ram that this is not a golden deer, this is a demon named Marich. He told the name also. So the same personality who is not bewildered in Krishna Leela and Vrindavan, who is not bewildered in the Ramayana and Ram Leela, how is he bewildered over here? Because even Balramji is under the will of Krishna's energies, Krishna's Leela Shakti. And therefore, this particular fact that Krishna willed that Balramji also gets fooled. Whether Arjun had a beard or didn't have a beard didn't matter. Even if Arjun came dressed as he was, still Balramji would not have recognized him if Krishna didn't want him to recognize. You know, that's how powerful Krishna's Maya Shakti is. There's a very interesting story which really reveals Krishna's, the power of Krishna's illusory potency. One time Krishna had, Krishna met one of his friends and they were sitting on the banks of a river discussing. And as they were discussing, this friend of Krishna told Krishna, "My dear Lord, I always heard about your Maya Shakti. I never understood what the meaning of Maya Shakti is. Can you show me how your Maya Shakti works?" Krishna told him, "See, it's a very risky affair. I wouldn't advise you to ask this question." Markandeya Rishi also asked this question, you know, "I want to see Krishna's Maya Shakti." And Markandeya Rishi got so bewildered. Krishna bewildered him so much. Practically, you know, he was in a deluge. Entire universe was drowning and he was the only person roaming around in the entire deluge. So here, when this friend of Krishna told him, he insisted, "I want to know your Maya Shakti." So Krishna told him, "So let us both go into the river and let us take a dip in the river and we will see who can remain inside for longest period of time." So this friend of Krishna said, "My dear Lord, how is this possible? I am like a simple Brahmana. I don't know pranayam also properly, you know. And you are a Raja Yogi. You are like the master. You are Yogeshwar. You know all the siddhis. You can stay forever inside the water. What will I do?" So Krishna said, no, you come with me. I will show you." So both of them went and Krishna and his friend, they both dipped into the water completely. And then after a few minutes, you know, this friend couldn't breathe. So he just came out. When he came out, Krishna was missing. Krishna didn't come out only. So he was bewildered where Krishna went. And when he came out, when he saw on the banks, he couldn't recognize the place where he was standing. A totally different place. So he started roaming around trying to find out what this place is, where he has reached and all that. So after some time roaming around like that, he had no choice but to settle down in that city. So he stayed over there. And eventually to make a living, he took up a job, started working. He got a lot of success in his occupation. He married, raised a family, he had children. And somehow, that one particular day, his wife died. And when his wife died, the people of the city, they said, "There is a custom in our city that whenever the wife dies first, the husband is cremated along with the wife. So we have to put you also in the fire, you know." So they started carrying him and taking him to throw him in the fire along with his wife. This man started panicking like anything. He was completely bewildered. He started crying. And then finally he decided, "I have to use my brain to get out from this problem." So then he told them, "I don't mind entering into the fire with my wife. I love my wife a lot. But let me have bath in the river, in the lake. And then after I have bath, then I can come." So he went and took a dip in the river. As soon as he took a dip and he came out, Krishna was standing in front of him. He was so bewildered. He said, "My dear Krishna, what happened? Where am I? Where did I go to?" Krishna told him, "You are here only. Just 5 minutes have passed." He said, 50 years had passed over there, you know. And here, only 5 minutes he was inside the water and he came out. In the meanwhile, a 50-year, you know, phenomena had happened. Krishna told him that, "I told you not to meddle with my Maya Shakti." So, somebody whose potencies are so powerful, the Lord's Maya Shakti is so powerful, and here Balramji, we find he is being subjugated by Krishna's illusory energy. And naturally, he not being able to recognize Arjun is not a big deal. So at the end of Chaturmas, of the 4 months of the rainy season, Balramji invited Arjun as a guest to eat in his house. This is the end of the Kartik Mass, basically. So Balramji's vrata was broken. Arjun's vrata was completed, Chaturmas vrata, and he was finally going to break the vrata. The result of Chaturmas, the result of the 4 months of tapasya that Arjun did in Prabha Kshetra was that he was getting Yogamaya, the internal energy of the Lord as his consort. So essentially when we take up tapasya for the sake of pleasing Krishna, for the sake of pleasing the Lord offers us his own energies literally. That's the amount of love that Krishna has for his devotees. So when Arjun came to Balramji's house and he saw Subhadra, instantly there was attraction. Both of them got attracted to each other. And while Balramji was honoring Arjun, respecting Arjun, treating him with so much awe and reverence, Arjun was too much distracted by Subhadra to pay any attention to what Balramji was doing. You know, Balramji was busy serving him and Arjun was completely absorbed in Subhadra. So after the whole, by the time Subhadra also understood that this is not sannyasi, but this is Arjun himself, she wanted to also marry Arjun. And then finally, the day came when the kidnapping was going to take place. So generally when somebody has to kidnap somebody else, there's a lot of planning that goes on. You know. So much planning, and when nobody sees you, here no planning, full spontaneous. You know. Arjun came on a chariot, picked up Subhadra and just left. You know. Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, he explains that Subhadra came out of her palace for a festival to the temple of Lord Vishnu. And Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur explains that this festival was actually a annual Rathyatra festival of Lord Vishnu after the Chaturmas. So Chaturmas is a time when Lord Vishnu is in a mystic slumber. He is in sleep for 4 months. And after 4 months of sleep, first time the Lord is brought out in a procession. That's called a Rathyatra in the traditional temples. So in the Chaturmas, on this day, on the Rathyatra day, Arjun kidnapped Subhadra and put him on his Rath and took her away. So it's very interesting that Subhadra Mahi is taken by Arjun on a Rath. The traditional Rathyatra that we celebrate in Jagannath Puri also signifies a Rathyatra where Subhadra is taken on a chariot along with Jagannath and Baldev. So there, in that Rathyatra, the gopis are stealing Krishna from Dwarka to Vrindavan. And here, Arjun is stealing Subhadra from Dwarka away from Krishna, basically. So Arjuna stole away Subhadra and all her friends were shouting, wailing, screaming. And generally when a girl is kidnapped, a girl naturally screams more than the people who are around her. In this kidnapping, Subhadra is not screaming at all. So the friends were even more bewildered. Why is she not screaming? So then Balramji became completely disturbed. And it's explained, the Srimad Bhagavatam explains that Balramji was as disturbed as an ocean during the full moon. Completely agitated. And Krishna came exactly at that point when Balramji was really agitated. And sat down and explained to Balramji what had happened exactly. And when he sweetly, with sweet words, touching his feet, respectfully, Krishna explained to Balramji, Balramji got pacified. He became peaceful. Krishna explained to Balramji that this was not a case of kidnapping, but this was a case of runaway. So he asked Balramji, did you see who was riding the chariot? So Balramji said, no, I was just bothered about Subhadra being kidnapped. He said, Subhadra only was riding the chariot. Have you ever seen a kidnapper, when he kidnaps somebody, the person who is kidnapped starts helping him and driving the car or something like that? It cannot be a kidnap case, it's a runaway case. And then Krishna, by his sweet words, explained to Balramji, and Balramji came to his senses, he understood what had exactly happened, and he calmed down. So whenever there is misunderstanding between people, generally there is a lot of agitation. When somebody is agitated, you cannot explain to an agitated person with more agitation. Only calm people can explain things to an agitated person. Now, how do you prevent somebody from being agitated? Or rather, how do you deal with an agitated person? Krishna dealt with Balramji with great respect. Generally, when somebody is agitated, why is he agitated? He's agitated because somebody has disrespected me. So Balramji was agitated because Arjun has disrespected, without asking me, has taken my sister. So Balramji's agitation is understood. So Krishna, first thing he did to pacify Balaramji from, you know, from such an agitation was gave him respect. As soon as Krishna respected him, Balaramji kind of calmed down. And then Krishna added on to that respect by offering sweet words. When somebody is highly agitated, the last thing he wants to know is he is wrong. If somebody tells him he is wrong, he will get agitated even more. Truth is very difficult to handle, you know, many times. So truth has to be presented in a palatable way. If truth is not presented in a palatable way, truth can be more difficult to handle than a lie. There was there's an old tale of Saturn. Saturn is like a devil, you know. And this talks about how the devil dominates people in society, in Kali Yuga. So there was a man named Raghu who was walking on the street, and the devil saw him. So the devil told his assistant, go and get him. The assistant went to him, and he jumped on the man's shoulder. And he started whispering in the man's ears, in Raghu's ears. He started telling him, you are discouraged. This man said, I am not. The devil said again, you are discouraged. The man said, I am not. The devil kept saying in his mouth, you are discouraged, you are discouraged, you are discouraged. After 10-15 times of selling, he said, maybe I am discouraged. And he actually got discouraged, you know. He became depressed. There was another man who was passing, and the devil told his assistant, now go and get this fellow. So the assistant went and jumped on his shoulder, and he started telling him that, you are discouraged. This man said, I am not. This fellow said, you are discouraged. He said, no, I am not. He kept saying, you are discouraged, you are discouraged, you are discouraged. He said, I am not. And then finally this man, he told the devil, you are a liar. I am not discouraged. As soon as he told the devil, you are a liar, the devil became discouraged, you know. Because that's the truth. So, truth burns. So when you tell the truth to somebody, that person cannot handle it, generally, you know. So if you tell a crippled person, somebody who doesn't have legs, that you are blind, he will not mind it. Because he's not blind. But if you tell him you are lame, then he'll mind it a lot. If you call a dishonest person dishonest, he will get mad. Why? Because somebody who is dishonest, when he is called dishonest, he can't handle it. If somebody is a cheater, you call him a cheater, he will go crazy. If somebody who is a cheater, when he is called a cheater, he can't handle it. So essentially, this is how bad qualities of human beings are. Whenever somebody has a bad quality, and you point out to that bad quality, that person gets agitated. But if somebody has a good quality, you point out to the good quality of the person, that person doesn't get agitated. He wants to hear more. Or batao. Do tin or batao. So here, Krishna knows exactly how to handle Balaramji. He is not pointing to Balaramji what mistake he made. Krishna didn't say, 4 months he was there, why didn't you recognize? He didn't say, you only invited him to your house, you only caused trouble, you know. Krishna didn't say all those things. Krishna didn't go to explain all that. Krishna respected Balaramji and he offered him sweet words of comfort. And that pacified Balaramji more than anything else, more than the facts. When Balaramji got pacified, he sent a lot of gifts for the couple. Naturally, after that, Arjun and Subhadra lived happily ever after. That's how the story ends, basically. But there are some very beautiful lessons that we can learn from this story, which is very important for us as sadhakas. The first lesson, which is the most important lesson here, is if Krishna is pleased with his devotee, he offers him his Yogamaya Shakti. Krishna offered Arjun Subhadra. He put Balaram under his spell, under an illusory spell, and Balaram couldn't recognize Arjun. Essentially, the energies of the Lord are subservient to the Lord. And when the devotee becomes subservient to the Lord actually make sure that his energies don't disturb him. In the Bhagavad Gita, when Krishna says, Yogakshemam Vahamyam, what does it mean? Yogakshemam Vahamyam essentially means, Krishna is saying, I provide what you lack and preserve what you have. What is that lack that a devotee has? the lack that a devotee has is the lack of spiritual consciousness. Krishna says, I provide that spiritual consciousness to you. Subhadra represents Yoga Maya, which is the spiritual consciousness that every living entity is seeking. By offering Arjun Subhadra, Krishna is actually indicating to us, anybody who is ready to follow the will of the Lord, Krishna is ready to offer the spiritual consciousness that he lacks. The second thing that we can learn from this whole episode is that Arjun is a great devotee of the Lord. He would never in his life on his own have ever decided to take the dress of a sannyasi and go and, you know, fool with Balramji. He would never have done it on his own. Krishna made him do it. Now, somebody who is having some high principles of life, like Arjun, it's difficult to do all these things. Krishna makes his devotee do some embarrassing things to prove to the world that a devotee can do anything for Krishna, including making the gopis come out naked. Embarrassing. Here, making Arjun, who is a grihastha, having already three wives, wearing a dress of a sannyasi. Embarrassing. Making Arjun fight an entire war, kill his own grandfather and guru. Very embarrassing. Now what record will you show? Kis kis ko mara? I killed my own guru. I mean, guru hatya is like one of the greatest sins. Embarrassing. Telling somebody who has never told a lie in his life to tell a lie. Embarrassing. Can you imagine Yudhishthira Maharaj, after that day he can never add this to his profile, you know. Never lied in my life. One thing eliminated from his profile forever, you know. So Krishna makes his devotees do the most embarrassing things to show the world that a devotee is not worried about his embarrassment. A devotee is worried about following the will of Krishna, even if it means a lifetime of embarrassment. And here, Arjun, by, you know, doing that thing what Krishna has told him, he actually proved that he is such an exalted devotee of the Lord. Generally, when a devotee comes in front of the Lord, disguised, instantly the disguise falls apart, right? In the Ramayana we find Hanumanji coming in front of Lord Ram, disguised as a sannyasi, you know. I mean, here are two great devotees of the Lord, Arjuna and Hanumanji, the heroes of the Ramayana and the Mahabharata, you know. Both of them disguised as sannyasis coming in front of the Lord. Arjun came in front of Balramji as a sannyasi, but Balramji couldn't recognize him only. And Hanumanji came in front of Ram, dressed as a sannyasi. As soon as Hanumanji came in front of Ram, the disguise fell apart. He couldn't hold the disguise anymore. Because in front of this Supreme Lord, how can you hold your disguise? How much ever you disguise, the disguise falls apart. And here, Arjun, we find, in spite of him coming in front of Balramji, his disguise stood. The reason his disguise stood is because he didn't disguise himself to cheat the Lord. He disguised himself to serve the Lord. And because he disguised himself to serve Krishna, Balramji also couldn't recognize him, in a sense. And the most important quality, or rather the most important lesson that we can learn from this particular Leela is Arjun's simplicity. He was ready to abide by the plan of the Lord without any problems, just ready to follow the... So what is simplicity? Srila Prabhupada explains the concept of simplicity in different ways in different places. So one definition Prabhupada says is, simplicity means without duplicity. Straightforward dealings, telling the truth even to an enemy. That is one level of what simplicity is. Example is given of Satyakam Jabali. His guru, Gautam Rishi, asked him, whether you are a Brahmana or what is your caste? I want to teach you, I will only teach Brahmanas. Satyakam Jabali went and asked his mother. His mother was a prostitute. She didn't know who his father was. She said, I don't know who you are, whether you're Brahmana or Shudra, I don't know. So this man went and told Gautam Rishi, I don't know who my father is. Gautam Rishi said, you're a Brahmana because you're honest. So essentially simplicity means straightforward in dealings. Second understanding of simplicity, or second level of simplicity is, simplicity means being unsophisticated. That's a very important characteristics of a devotee, being completely unsophisticated. Uddhava the disciple of Brihaspati, the cousin brother of Krishna, dressed gorgeously, exalted devotee, when he went to Vrindavan, Krishna sent Uddhava to Vrindavan to see what is the meaning of being a great devotee of him. So Uddhava considered himself to be a great devotee sitting in Dwarka. When he went to Vrindavan and saw the simplicity of the gopis, he said, externals don't matter at all. Devotee means somebody who is completely unsophisticated in his love for Krishna. Srila Prabhupada, one time he was sitting in an airport, some place, and there was an announcement made that all the devotees move this side. As soon as the announcement was made, the first person walked is Srila Prabhupada, walked this side. Then the devotee made the announcement. He said, Prabhupada, this announcement is not for you, this is for all the devotees. Prabhupada said, I am also trying to be a devotee. Completely unsophisticated. You know. The acharya of the entire world, he is the guru of all these people. And one disciple tells him, all devotees move, he also moved along. The third definition of simplicity is willing to accept what Krishna provides and not hanker for more. That's a very important definition of simplicity. We find in the Chaitanya Charitamrita the story of Sridhar Kolavech. Extremely simple in his dealings. And the next chapter, next section that we are going to see is the connection between this story and the next story. Arjun showing simplicity in one way. And the next story is about another devotee whose name is Shrutadev, showing simplicity in a totally different way. And therefore, that's the connection between the two stories. The fifth and the most important meaning of the word simplicity is what Arjun represents here. This entire story is to show this one fact. Simplicity essentially means simply accepting Krishna's order without a doubt. That's the meaning of the word simplicity. Another meaning of the word simplicity. Having faith in the order of the Guru and the Supreme Lord. Here, Arjuna, he shows that he is just simply ready to abide by Krishna's will. And therefore, it is said that life is like a game of chess, which you play with Krishna, play with God. After every move of yours, he makes a move. He makes the next move. Your moves are called choices, and his moves are called consequences. So when we make our choices, when we take up this choice of following Krishna's will, then Krishna has his way of making his choices, which are known as consequences. And therefore, many times for us to make choices, we have our complicated minds. And with the complication of the mind, when we make choices, we cannot make choices with simplicity. And therefore, one of the most important qualities to have to be a wonderful devotee is this simplicity that Arjuna had, willingness to follow the will of Krishna simply and not really with too much doubt in the mind. One time there was a rich man, and this man, he died. He had only one son. And he left the entire fortune to his son. The son fooled around, wasted the entire fortune. And after everything was over, the son became poor. And there were only two things left with his son, finally. And both of them were silver images. One was a silver image of Lord Shiva, and one was a silver image of Nandi, the bull carrier of Lord Shiva. So this fellow went to a silversmith to sell the two images. He said, so he weighed the image of Lord Shiva, and then he weighed the image of Nandi. So he said, I'll pay you 300 rupees for the image of Lord Shiva, and 500 rupees for the image of Nandi. Now this person, this boy, he had some faith at least in God. So he said, how is it possible? What nonsense is this? You should pay me 500 rupees for Lord Shiva's image and 300 rupees for Nandi's image. This man said, no. For me, these images don't make any difference. For me, what makes a difference is the amount of silver in it. You know. So many times, we are like the silversmith. Completely dull. We don't understand the difference between this and that. We don't understand the difference between such pure teaching, such pure instructions, and our mind's plannings, our mind's will. And therefore, it is very important to clean the mind through attentive chanting of the holy names of the Lord, so that eventually the simplicity that is a must for a devotee wakes up. But unfortunately, our mind is compared to, it has so much dirt in it. There was once a man who was looking for a job, and he approached a MLA to get a job, you know, through some contact. So the MLA said, I'll take you to the minister's house, but you dress up nicely and come. So the MLA, he saw that this fellow, his socks were stinking like anything. So this MLA said, you can't come like this to the minister, you know. And he knew this fellow doesn't have money, so he brought him a new pair of socks. He said, you wear this new pair of socks and you come. Don't come with wearing the old pair of socks. This fellow said, no problem. So next day he was there on time with the new pair of, wearing the new pair of socks. And they were going to the minister's house. The MLA said, you're still stinking, what's wrong? This fellow said, I'm carrying the old socks to show you, I didn't wear it, you know. That's how people are, you know. So the nature of the mind is like the stinking pair of socks. So essentially, even if you give the mind everything, it will find some reason to be unhappy. It will find some reason to be dissatisfied. And therefore, simplicity just doesn't come because we have such a cluttered and dirty mind that we are handling. And therefore, when we chant the holy names of the Lord, did you ever think, why do we chant the same mantra again and again and again? It's so simple. That's what the mind needs. The mind is already super complicated. You give the mind Vedic complicated mantras, the mind will get even more complicated. Therefore, in Kali Yuga, for already complicated minds, you need a simple process. One time, there was a small boy who went to his grandfather, and he asked him that, why do we chant the same mantra again and again? Yeah. Repetitively, same thing again and again. Many people have very different ideas, you know, about when they're told to chant. So he said, what is the meaning of Hare Krishna Mahamantra? Hare Krishna Mahamantra essentially means that, hey Krishna, hey Radharani, hey energies of Krishna, please engage me in your service. So now, why to say same thing again and again? I can say it once in a day and then go and do service. Why do I need to chant? If I am chanting only to tell that please give me service, better I go and do service. Somebody else is saying like Om Namah Shivaya means I bow down to you Lord Shiva. Instead of saying that again and again, why don't I just bow down once to Lord Shiva and go and do my work, you know? Again and again, why do we say the same thing? And therefore, this grandfather was telling him that when I am chanting the mantra, the action of it, the meaning of it may be I bow down to Lord Shiva, or the meaning of it may be is that I want to serve the Lord. But more important than just the meaning of the mantra is the intention behind which we chant the mantra. Intention with which we chant the mantra. And therefore, when we actually say, my dear Lord, I want to please engage me in your service, what we are saying is that, my dear Lord, I want to surrender to you. In a sense, when we look at the intention behind the words that we chant, that's more important than just mechanically chanting the words. And why do we repeat? Somebody can say that Krishna is so compassionate that once if I chant his name, he should be ready to accept me. Why do I need to keep saying, I surrender unto you, I surrender unto you, I surrender? Vapas vapas kyun bolna? Why do you have to repeat so many times? This person is saying, we don't repeat so many times to tell Krishna that I am surrendering unto you. We repeat so many times to tell our mind, I am surrendering to Krishna. Our mind is so complicated that it keeps running here and there. And we keep repeating the Hare Krishna Mahamantra again and again, not to tell Krishna, I am chanting your names and I am surrendering unto you. To tell our mind that I am surrendering to Krishna. And therefore, till we develop the simplicity of Arjun, to the extent that automatically we chant Krishna's holy names, Narad Muni heard in Arjun's heartbeat Krishna's names being chanted. Till we automatically develop that quality of chanting Krishna's name because of the simplicity of the heart that we have to abide by the will of Krishna, we have to mechanically do it. So that the complicated mind gets used to the simplicity of the holy names and eventually it becomes simple like Arjun. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.
గ్రంథరాజ్ శ్రీమద్ భాగవతంకి శిల ప్రభుపాదికి.
హరే కృష్ణ. దేర్ ఆర్ ఫ్యూ అనౌన్స్మెంట్స్. Gopal's Garden High School is happy to announce the opening of admission for the academic year 2017-18. The school has been in existence since the last 15 years.